Now, I went very quickly through that, so I assume there'll be some questions. So I'm just going to stop now, and maybe we can just have a discussion. And again, I'm not an expert. Well, it depends on the voltages they use and how far they are, but it's on average is somewhere between 5 and 10%. So Hydro-Québec will say it's like 5%, and other critics would say it's as much as 10%. But they probably lose as, you probably use as much as 10% of the power before it gets here, especially if you start counting the embodied energy in the infrastructure to move it. It would be 25 or 30. Well, my understanding is that a lot of these projects are built on the 1950s concept that electricity demand will grow continually forever. And in fact, since about the mid-1970s, when a lot of these things were first conceived, the rate of growth in demand for electricity, both in Canada and the United States, has actually been dropping. And in some parts, in some states and in some provinces of Canada, it's actually not the growth is not only the growth in demand is dropping, but actually the demand is dropping, and basically we use about 50% of the electricity that's generated in North America is wasted, either through transmission losses, or inappropriate uses, or inefficient equipment, and there's huge opportunities to invest in efficiency and conservation. That should be made first before we build any new kinds of generation. And that, you know, several of the New England states are actually in the forefront of promoting conservation and efficiency, but it's still not getting the same kind of investment that new construction is getting. So most politicians and utilities say, yes, we're conserving, and here's our little program over here. And if you call up, maybe we'll give you a light bulb and we'll talk to you. But over here, we're spending $1 billion on a new plant. And I've challenged a Premier of Ontario once in a face-to-face dialogue in this and said, you give me the same amount of billions you're willing to give to that nuclear power plant, and I'll produce more megawatts than you can produce megawatts. And there's lots of technology that's just not being used, it's not being invested in, and the solution to this problem is investing in conservation and efficiency and not into new generation. And we do need to bring renewables on, but we shouldn't be investing in them as heavily as we invest in traditional forms of generation. We should be investing in conservation and efficiency the way we used to invest in huge production projects.
From one of your slides, it seemed to indicate that there's huge amounts of natural gas in portions of Canada that are also creating this hydropower. Isn't natural gas pricing starting to compete with the pricing of hydropower at this point, and it's not happening?
No, there's been a revolution in natural gas in North America. 10 years ago, when I was sitting talking to government officials about what the solutions to climate change were, natural gas was a short-term possibility. And then fracking suddenly appeared, and we went from being continually reducing, especially in the United States, the amount of production was dropping, to now where it's actually growing, and it started to drop in Canada, and now it's growing again because of fracking. So the price of natural gas has actually been really low. And it does compete with coal, and what we have seen is that a number of projects, planned projects, and closures of coal plants in the United States are not going forward in favor of gas. But there are huge problems associated with getting natural gas from through fracking and the other esoteric methods of getting it. And the same is happening in Canada. But there are very little natural gas generation in Canada. Most of the natural gas in Canada is used for heating, and we're wasting it. In terms of conservation, there's no reason why this building we're in now isn't generating a surplus of electricity and heating itself. If it was designed properly, it could do that. It wouldn't need to be plugged into anything else. So, and it could be, if it's burning natural gas for heat, it could be making electricity at the same time because you're wasting the opportunity. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about investing in. And I've seen the technology where if you're heating your house with an old-fashioned hot water system, there is a unit now that's available that can produce electricity while it's heating your house. There are huge kinds of opportunities that are just being missed. We're going from a system in which trying to control large amounts of electricity was really done by a guy with a slide rule in a room somewhere. And now that we have all this fancy digital technology, we can actually build a grid, a smart grid, that actually can handle 10,000 inputs instead of one. And that's where we should be going. And that if we're going to be investing in power lines, we should be investing in that kind of a grid, not in one to bring a massive amount of power through a state. And that's where the solution, that one of the major solutions is that we need a distributed system rather than a centralized system. There's a hand back there. Absolutely.
The manager doesn't want it, but maybe the end user doesn't want it either if they're educated.
Yeah, and that's where you should be heading here, is finding out where Hydro-Quebec wants this power to go, who's the intended market, and going there and raising the objection there and saying this is a bad idea. I remember that full page ad in the New York Times that the Cree ran in the early 90s, and what it was a picture of dead caribou. There was an incident incident about 30 years ago in which caribou were migrating through the James Bay region, and they were releasing water because the dam was filling up, and they just released the water without realizing that 60 miles downstream there were 10,000 caribou trying to wade through a little stream, because that's what they had created, was a little stream. Suddenly it was a huge torrent, and they killed 10,000. And it was referring to that kind of a story in the New York Times, and then campaigning in the U.S. This is the same technique that's been used on Walmart and a number of other major consumer corporations, where corporate ethics has gone to the company and said, "Well, if you don't clean up your act, we'll do things that will affect your stock price. We'll do things that will affect the number of people coming in the door to shop. Do you want protesters outside every one of your stores?" And eventually they get it and they say, "No, we don't want that. In fact, we want to be sustainable." And now we have Walmart trying to be the most sustainable mega corporation in the world. Yes, but still that's I think that's where you can win it. You want to campaign here on "we don't want it in New Hampshire," and you go down the end of the road and say, "Do you guys need this power?" And come back to me and say, "Don't buy the power, because what happens is we get this huge, terrible thing, and it's going to go through your ski area, it's going to go where you like to go for maple syrup, it's going to go where you like to go and go for a drive and look at the beautiful trees in the fall, and instead you're going to see this ugly power line." So take the fight down south of here. They're all on towers. Yeah, and I don't know if some of us are old enough to remember the big blackout in the 1960s, and that actually was a problem in Queenston, in Queenston Heights in Ontario. The one in, was it 2002 or 2003? That was a problem in Ohio with a tree growing too high under a power line. So we have an integrated system. Anything that happens here can affect what happens in Ontario and Quebec. So we need to have we need a smart grid in North America that's coordinated. I have no problem with sharing excess power. Sometimes when you're generating power. Sometimes you have more than you need. Sometimes you need more. So we should be sharing it back and forth across the border. But we don't need to lay waste to pristine forests in order to produce power that's not necessary. Any other questions? It may be showing up in some of the Quebec press, but it's not showing up in the national press in Canada. This is not a story. And it would be considered a very minor story in terms of the environment when you consider that the federal government has gone to war against environmental organizations. I didn't say earlier is that last January, the Minister of Natural Resources, I guess the equivalent to the Interior Minister here, actually put out an open letter and accused and said that environmentalists and other radicals were accepting funds from foreign interests in order to interfere with Canada's best interests by opposing pipelines. Of course, those foreign interests were charitable foundations. And so my favorite donation of this past year was, here's $200 from two radical dupes. And this issue isn't getting any attention here, in Canada, I haven't heard. I'm not in daily contact with what's happening in Quebec, but I do hear what's happening in Quebec, and there's not much discussion there at all about this. There has been a lot of attention on a nuclear power plant in Quebec, which the government that was just recently elected has announced that it's not going to refurbish and keep running. So it's actually our first nuclear victory. But they only built the plant in the 1970s so they could see what the technology was like, because they never needed the power. But that's who you're dealing with, is in a massive public corporation that will build two nuclear power plants just to see what the technology is like, because they never needed the power. And now that it's been a 40-year experiment and it's cost them several billion dollars, they're going to stop. But the previous government that was just defeated was getting ready to put another $5 billion into that plant to keep it going. So we have a huge fight on terms of energy in North America. And so you have to see the tar sands. We haven't mentioned the tar sands, but you have to see the tar sands and natural gas and hydro and nuclear power all as one issue. And it's all a way of trying to avoid the inevitable, which is what we have to do, is become more efficient and more innovative with what our energy solutions are. And that's the answer to this. And there's no need to build a power line through New Hampshire to supply power to Boston. There's other ways to supply Boston's power. Any other questions, comments? Over there first. I don't know. Yeah, but a 14-story building, if it was designed properly, should be a net producer of energy rather than a net user. And you can build that building to do that, if that's your goal. And it won't cost a significant amount more to do it. And whatever extra cost you have, you'll get in energy savings in the future. Well, it's owned by the province, the company. The profits, it doesn't actually make a profit. It's designed to be neutral. But the profits from exporting, they go back to the provincial government. They also subsidize the electricity rates for people in Quebec. So Quebec has the largest proportion of electric heat in North America. Because, of course, once they built these dams, they had to figure out what to do with the power. So they're taking the most refined form of energy we have that's really good at running digital things and doing really clever things, and they're just heating up a coil. And, in fact, Quebec has complained that its efforts to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions are really, really hard because they really can only work on cars. to reduce emissions because all their electricity is hydroelectricity. And they also have the benefit of a very large aluminum plant that pays very little for electricity relative to other places in the world. So there's an area in Quebec that has a huge aluminum production facility because the electricity rates are so low in Quebec. But they pay the general benefit to the public is that they pay less than the 14 cents you're paying here, a lot less. You had one, is there anyone over there? Is there one back there? Yeah. Well, they have come to agreements now. Several hundred million dollars was paid to the Cree in James Bay. And most of that money has been well invested, and they are trying to develop their own economic opportunities. The Inuit in northern Quebec also received a settlement, and the Innu in Labrador eventually did receive received in a settlement. But again, it was done after. You know, so... There's the dam, here's the money. and because they did a good job of fighting, they got a reasonable deal out of it, but they weren't consulted. And it was in Manitoba, the same kind of battles were taking place.
It's mind-boggling that you say that James Bay is the size of New England. It's fed by nine rivers, blocked up nine rivers. I mean, that's like taking the Penobscot, the Androscoggin, the Merrimack River, the Connecticut River, and the Hudson River, and maybe a couple of others there I can't think of, and damming them up. I mean, it's just absolutely mind-boggling. Where's the conscience of Canada coming in? It's one of the most beautiful countries in the world, and they're just absolutely decimating.
Well, you know, we have rules in Canada when we have logging, that you can't log within 50 feet of the road, so when you drive through, it looks like you have trees forever. But as soon as it's out of sight, let's dig a hole and dig it up and ship it south. We've been raising the same questions. You know, it's the same fight we have in Canada that you have here, that there are those who don't understand the value, the natural capital value of that land. It's 1,000 miles from anywhere, and it's not... there, so you could do that kind of thing. If there was a significant population there, they couldn't have done it. But because the only population was an Aboriginal population, they could come in and tell them what they were going to do. We now have clarified the Constitution of Canada, and we didn't actually have a constitution in the early 70s. We did get one in the early 80s, and part of that constitution now says that you can't come into an area that belongs to First Nations and not talk to them and get there and work with them before you go ahead with a project. And our Supreme Court has supported that on a couple of cases now. In fact, there's one just coming for now from over a tar sands project. So they now have the right to consult. When these projects first came forward 25, 30 years ago, they didn't have that right. But now they do, and they do have a great deal of influence in how a project is presented, but not a great deal of influence in how whether or not a project goes forward. Okay, over here.
I thought Canada worked under the system of precautionary principle, where things can't be done unless they're proven not to be harmful.
Yeah, that's not us. Well, ours is, if an American will buy it, good. Well, actually, when they attacked us for accepting foreign money, we did some research and discovered that the environmental charitable group in Canada that received the most money from U.S. foundations was Ducks Unlimited. And, of course, Ducks Unlimited, they preserve wetlands so that people can go shoot the ducks. And I always thought that selling swamps to Americans was a great idea. You know, my parents bought a swamp in Florida. But we were still characterized as that being a bad thing. And what we found, we did some polling and found that it actually does resonate with Canadians, the idea that foreigners might be influencing our decisions. which is kind of odd since the whole point is to get, sell the foreigner stuff. There's a hand over here.
I've heard for years that there's a thing called supply and demand. And I think this issue falls into the realm of supply and demand. And I've also heard that you can't store electricity. Now, I don't know if man has found a way to store electricity. But why is there such a push to create more electricity if it goes disproportionately against the supply or inventory, if it's stored? Now, tell me, is supply and demand a factor here?
I think it started out that way. I have a friend who's an expert in history of energy and energy efficiency, and what he pointed out was that the thinking that developed, and especially about electricity, was that through the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s, demand for electricity was increasing in North America by about 7% per year. And that means it doubles every 10 years. So if you're sitting in 1965, you're thinking, by 1975, I have to have twice as much capacity because it's going to grow. But what they weren't taking into account is that throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s, while that was happening, they were electrifying North America. And they were figuring out, oh, you need a fridge. Oh, now you have a rec room, you need another fridge. But by the mid-1970s, we all had two fridges and all the electric gizmos that we could get. And in fact, now when you go out and buy a new flat-screen TV, it runs on a third of the electricity that the one you bought 10 years ago. Their planning processes, and there's 10, 15, 20-year planning processes of this, are still not catching up. They're still thinking in terms of demand's going to continue to grow and not realizing that the demand hasn't grown. But then there's a secondary factor, is that if you produce something really cheap, even if there's not a need for it, someone will find a need for it. And someone will buy it if it's cheap. So if you flood the market with electricity, then you'll get another fridge. You'll get another electric door opener or whatever you want. And so that's part of it too. And so I don't think that really supply and demand works here. I think that, and there's also this whole thing, we don't want to plan, right? We plan to meet a mystical thing that's going to happen organically because the market just happens to be on its own. But this is about infrastructure. If you build highways, cars come. The solution is we're always going to build more roads and that'll make the traffic better, and then you build a road and suddenly there's more traffic. And so, it's the same kind of process. I think over there and then you.
Just regarding the settlement of the Crees, have there been any studies done to show, they lost their fishing, they lost many things. Has that covered the expense of what they lost?
Well, there have been a number of studies, and there have been health problems, there's social problems. The resources weren't divided evenly, so some people have really succeeded, others haven't. Those who wanted to maintain a traditional lifestyle have had a real challenge because their trap lines and their fishing areas are gone. So there's a big disparity in those communities. And there's still, especially in Labrador, there's constant problems with kids sniffing glues and gasoline. There's a huge sort of social despondency left in those communities. And there's not been, if the money they've received has not been enough to deal with those problems. Okay, over here, and then I'll swing over that way.
We talked earlier about the loss of power when it's carried on overhead lines. And I think the number that we've been hearing this project is around 7%. What's interesting is that if one puts a dollar value on that lost power, it's clearly enough money over the life of the project to pay for whatever the incremental costs are of burying it. You're indicating in Canada that are there now laws in Canada and various provinces that require undergrounding of transmission lines?
No. Now, there was just because the irony of the city of Montreal having no electricity for 3 weeks, after the ice storm in a place where they have all this power was a very big political problem. And the response was, well, we'll bury our cable in the future. But they didn't actually live up to that. Over here. Well, I think so, because I think the United States wastes half the electricity it uses, the same as the Canadians. And you could also use the same argument we just heard there about the 7%. Well, that's another power plant. They could build a power plant wherever they need the power with the money that they're going to lose on the transmission from Quebec. So, yeah, the economics are so strange.
There's been a lot of claims by the proponents of this project that it would reduce the electricity costs in New Hampshire. I mean, how would you just weigh in on that?
Well, it might. They might charge you less so that they'll buy it from them. Like I said, if you can make it cheaper, you can sell it cheaper, and you can warp the market by doing that. So, but is the power actually going to be, are there any transformers going to be built in New Hampshire, or is it just going to come right through? Well, I think if we had several millennium, we have a chance of fixing it. So, yeah, it would be an incredible project to put it back together.
I sometimes feel like we're spitting into the ocean and we're all fighting Hydro Quebec here with this Northern Pass. You're a former Greenpeacer, short of us going to violence or harpooning somebody. What methods can you suggest to us that would really be effective to stop it? We have great people working on this opposition, but we need to do more when apparently they don't even know about us up there in Canada.
Well, I think you have to stop it here. Hydro-Québec will look for easier territory to move through if there's some place they'll... Well, it's like electricity. It goes to the place with the least resistance. So the more pressure you can create here, the more people in New Hampshire who can stand up and say, I don't want it here, and can start talking to your state legislators, and whoever. I'm not sure the legal authorities of who controls this, but I'm sure the state has a lot to say with what passes through. Then that's the way to approach this, and to convince New Hampshire not to sell land and right-of-ways, that they're not surrounded, and that's really important because. In all these kinds of projects, they'll come through and say, "Well, you might as well sell, because your neighbor sold," and you sign up and you find your neighbor hasn't sold. So you want to make sure that everyone in New Hampshire knows that no one's selling, or they're going to be the only ones that are selling. Back there.
I think a comment to include the customer is also very pertinent. I'll make an admission. I'm a new resident. In Boston, there is, and I've worked there. I've worked in Boston for 17 years. I only recently came up there last February. There is no knowledge whatsoever. I just started seeing bumper stickers, started seeing information about it, but only after I came up here. So one thing that I think is important is also educate the potential end customer. Massachusetts certainly a potential end customer. And in Massachusetts, I don't know if you're aware of it, they deregulated their electric tell your local carrier, whether it's Unitil or Install or wherever,
I think a few press conferences in Boston would be a good idea. To see, okay.
I just kind of want to play devil's advocate here for a second from, I guess, sustainability perspective. Building on her question of if we are miraculously able to cut off demand and say the United States doesn't want your power anymore, we don't like what you're doing to Caribou, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any chance that this project would be, or already in existence, would be decommissioned or deconstructed? And would that then cause more environmental damage? And then, so I'm thinking, like, I guess what I'm saying is, if it's already there, we've already done the damage, is it worth using the power that's already there, rather than saying, no, we don't want this power, and then causing more destruction in the U.S. or elsewhere to fight that source?
Well, that's a good question. Well, what I'd say is that there are projects proposed to build more. And the first thing we need to do is stop that. And then once we stop that and we start to ratchet down the demand and we start to get a distributed electrical system that's sustainable, then these projects will not be sustainable. And there will be efforts to blow those dams out of there and allow nature to take over again. But we are talking a very long time. There's an awful lot of money invested there. In the 1970s, the James Bay project cost $17 billion. So it's a huge project. So they want to get their money back, but they can get their money back without building any more corridors. The new corridor, they can ship all they can sell now with the corridors that exist. They want new ones so they can justify building new dams. And so let's stop the new ones first, and then we'll try to figure out what happens when you try to blow up 100 million tons of concrete.
But there's your argument right there, to take back to Quebecers, okay, is that, you know, building new cores that cause more damage when you don't need the power, they're creating an artificial need for that.
Yep.
Take a break back, and it's going to reflect on you. It's going to destroy your livelihood up there.
Yeah. And the whole notion in Quebec that, especially in a number of provinces, and the reasons why there's not interprovincial connections in Canada is that each province had their own crown corporation, we call it, or state corporation, and they all saw use controlling electricity as a way of promoting industry. So Ontario used to boast that it had the cheapest electricity, and we produced 1 million cars a year, and had a major portion of the manufacturing in North America. And of course, we're hurting in Ontario, like you're hurting in the Midwest, because that manufacturing is gone, and the low price of electricity didn't make any difference. Anyway, right there.
Do you think our challenge in New England is possibly even harder to overcome? Can hydro make the argument that it's actually less environmentally destructive than tar sands? Because that's really all our country.
Fiddly D and fiddly dumb. I don't think they're related. What they're related in this whole notion in Canada that we should be exporting energy, but they're totally different things. They have different end uses. You're not going to be generating electricity with tar sands oil. You're going to be putting it in cars and furnace in your furnaces. So it's not sort of directly comparable. The damage is really hard to say one is worse than the other. The potential in the tar sands is much worse because we're also talking about extremely toxic materials that are being stored. There is one tailings pond in northern Alberta that's 15 kilometers long, and it's only about 200 yards from the Athabasca River. So it could destroy, and if there was ever a disaster, an accident or a natural disaster or somehow that pond actually got into the river, we have a huge ecological nightmare. That's not the same kind of effect that the dams have, but the dams have an ongoing, continual problem. So I don't think we can put them in the same package. But you are right, is that all the attention goes on the tar sands. It's the same in Canada. It's very hard to talk about other environmental issues, and that's not the only thing the Sierra Club is concerned about in Canada, but it's the one thing that when the media calls is what they get. And I'm getting flashed over here.
So guys, I know this is an ongoing thing, but if we can just try and wrap this up with a couple more questions, I'm sure we can talk about this afterwards, or if you still have questions, you can talk to John Abbott, or Will Abbott tomorrow at 4 o'clock here again, or actually over at Boyd tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
Okay, so a couple more, and then we'll wrap it up. So I got two hands back there for a long time. If you want to get Quebec Hydro's attention, say don't go to Montreal as me a tourist. Don't go there for your holidays. Don't go there to shop. That will get their attention. They've never encountered a campaign like that, where. Well, I wonder. Yeah. Oh, because no one's done it yet. But they really have not done that. And it would actually try and drive a wedge between different factors and factions and industries in Quebec. Right now it's sort of Quebec Hydro is Quebec's, and there's also a very nationalist place in Quebec. And so they see Ontario, they see Quebec Hydro as their thing. So it's very much the politicians like to especially sort of attach the success of Hydro Quebec to the success of the Francophone community in North America. So they have never encountered a counterattack of that nature. So I would think that would be useful and to get some attention in Quebec, so that there's some kind of they realize. Yeah, and also to actually you might want to frame it in terms of you want the right to self-determination in New Hampshire. You want to determine what kind of industries and what kind of things happen in New Hampshire, just like they want to determine what happens in Quebec for Quebecers. So it's a similar kind of thing. And why should Quebecers have the right to walk through your territory just because they want to sell some of their products to somebody else? So yeah, I would, you know, don't tell anyone I said that because. I'm already under the influence of foreigners, and to think that I would actually say something that would hurt Canada would be terrible. Okay, last question. I'll get you some more details on that, and we'll pass it through to the group. But my understanding is that this allows them to ship more power. But there's also opportunities in Canada, and they should be actually calling on my province, Ontario, and saying, shut down that nuclear power plant that's costing you a fortune, and take this hydro that's here, and we'll build. You know, we'll only have to build a line that's like 2 miles long from one across the Ottawa River. To get here. But actually, Quebec Power is running a different phase than Ontario Power, so it doesn't actually connect well. but we would, you know, in Ontario, I'd be glad since it's already there, and if I could shut down a nuke, I would take that. I think that in relative terms, in terms of the risk and the cost, that until we figure out how to do where we want to go and we can shut it down, let's use that power to replace the bad things. And they could do that in Ontario a lot easier than shipping it down here.
This is a real quick question. What's the status of Deep River now?
Deep River, well, now it's now actually owned by SNC-Lavalin, which is a Quebec engineering firm. get this. The Canadian federal government invested over since the Second World War about $70 billion into Atomic Energy Canada Limited, and they sold it 2 years ago for $15 million and retained $75 million of its liabilities. And the company that actually developed the design, there is only one province. Ontario wants to build another reactor complex, but they put out a tender 3 years ago, and unlike the tender they put out for renewable energy, in which they said we want 500 megawatts of renewable energy, and they got 5,000 megawatts of bids. They've never renounced what the bids were because they were so big that they couldn't possibly maintain their support for building another power plant, another nuke, because the cost is, the estimated cost is something in the order of $26 to $30 billion. And the cost overruns, of course, make it more like 50. And the Ontario budget looks a lot like your federal budget right now. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. So thank you all for coming, and have a good ride home.